scoring the touchdown. They're going to fake this. Drew Tate behind Stidham. Tate will take it, and he will not get it.
Not even close.
Mitchell has his man, and it is picked off. Emmanuel Davis. Mitchell again. Fires. The 15-yard line.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
How you doing this week, Mike?
Well, another piss-poor performance by our favorite team. I try not to get too down about a loss, but it's hard when you think your team's better than what they actually are. So another poor performance by them.
Yeah, you were ahead of the curve on this one, man. It was, a few weeks ago? Maybe it was even after the Montreal victory, but it could have been after the loss to the Argos, where you were basically saying this was a bad football team, and I was the guy sitting here trying to hold out hope. No, they're going to get this turned around. I'm fully in support of the fact of everything you said all that while ago. This is a bad football team. Simply put, this team, I wrote a piece for 3Down Nation outlining what I thought was wrong with this team. And literally, I usually do some research for this show. I'll put my thoughts down. I literally have nothing written down for this game preview or this game review against the Stampeders because it's literally the same every single week that we are talking about. Why did they lose this game? Because they sucked covering people. They couldn't tackle. They're not running the football. Like, it's the same garbage stuff that we have to talk about week in and week out. I feel like a broken record, and maybe that's a reference that kids these days won't understand because records haven't existed since I was a kid. But like, it seems every single week you and I sit down, we do this show, and it's the same crap over and over again. And if they're just going to keep putting out the same garbage football, we're going to keep talking about the same garbage stuff, and they're going to keep losing football games. And this team is too talented to be this bad. I do not understand. I cannot wrap my head around this.
Now, does the blame fall partially on Ken Austin and Eric Tillman? Because you look at this offensive line. They didn't really do anything in the offseason to help out the offensive line. And then you look at the secondary, and I don't see much that they did in the offseason to help them out either. So do you feel like this is their fault?
Absolutely. I absolutely think it's their fault. I think this all falls at the feet of Ken Austin and Eric Tillman for building a roster that I understand you get high-priced guys. That means you're going to have to skimp elsewhere. But if you look at the players this team lost over the last offseason, it was glue guys. And we should have seen this coming. And maybe we were just ignorant to it. We thought they've been able to replenish players so frequently that this wasn't going to be a big deal. But even though none of these guys would consider all-star players. Brian Hall, gone. Eric Norwood, gone. Justin Hickman, gone. And they found a way to replace those guys, I would say, adequately along the defensive line. I think Adrian Tracy has played well. I think John Chick has been outstanding. And Drake Nevis has provided. So it's like, okay, they lost those guys and they found something. But the defensive line, it's anchored by the big guy, Big Teddy. So you kind of, okay, if he's there, the rest can kind of help itself out. But you mentioned the secondary. Brandon Stewart was a guy who was loathed here by Ticats fans. I think every single one of them that were ripping that guy would take him back in a heartbeat right now. Mike Edom was a Canadian player that they traded for from the Montreal Alouettes in the last season. He's a young guy, was a first-round draft pick. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he might have even been an all-star in his first year in the league. Fell out of favor in Montreal, came here. They let him walk. Both those guys go to BC. Look at BC secondary. It's pretty damn great.
Yeah.
We lost these players. Seriously. Like, yep. I'm just... You let these guys go, these middle-of-the-road guys go, and they've replaced them with players that just aren't good enough. Cassius Vaughn is just – he's the guy I'm going to single out on defense. He's just not good at his job, and I don't like calling for guys to get cut, but he's not a good corner. He can't cover. He can't tackle. He's just not good. Like, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, the first touchdown pass of the game for Calgary, I thought he had a chance to intercept that ball. I forget who he was thrown to, but it looked like he was cutting up, and he looked like he might have a chance to intercept it, but it just went right by him, and boom, touchdown. Beautiful pass by Mitchell. He put it in where he needed to put it in, but yeah, you're right. Vaughn has not been good. He's been in there for two or three games now, and it's just not working out. And we're seeing some of these trades. What do you think? Are they maybe throwing away the future because they're so desperate to win now?
I don't know if I'd go that far because, like, the one big trade that happened this past week was they dealt a Negless player to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for former All-Star Johnny Adams, who had fallen out of favor in Winnipeg. He had not been playing well since he got back from injury, but it was a Negless player and it was a quarterback that this team has a lot of quarterbacks. I don't think BJ Daniels, who was the guy that they sent to Winnipeg, was going to be a guy that no, wait, it wasn't BJ Daniels. BJ Daniels is who they sent to Saskatchewan. Who the hell did they? You know what? I screwed
Was
that
it a
up.
draft pick?
No, it wasn't a draft pick. It was a Negless player. I
Okay.
don't have the name of him here. For some reason, I had
Yeah.
BJ Daniels written down, and then I was like, no, they traded him to Saskatchewan because they got him from Saskatchewan when they traded Jake Waters to Saskatchewan earlier in the year. So that was my mistake. Anyway, so they traded a Negless player, which who knows if that guy's ever going to show up. For every Negless player that gets traded, some of them are Taj Boyd, and some of them end up being Chris Williams. Who knows? But Johnny Adams, if he can refine his form from last year when he was a West Division All-Star in his first year in the CFL, maybe this is not a bad trade, but it does seem like a bit of a win now type deal because they just need help in the back end. Like Courtney Steven is hurt and Mike Daly came in, and that's a guy who actually did. He came in, stepped up, and has always stepped up. Someone has got to explain to me how this guy, every time he steps in the field, is out there making plays, and the only way he gets on the field is if someone gets hurt. This guy can be a starting safety in this league. And think about how the Ticats could work the ratio if a guy like Mike Daly was starting at safety and you had Courtney Steven on the wide side corner position, then you wouldn't have to trade for a Johnny Adams. Or if you did, you wouldn't have to use a Cassius Vaughn. Like, it's sort of like the dominoes falling. And to me, this is also a mistake that falls at the feet of Austin, is that he's not, I don't think, and I'm not a coach, and I'm not going to sit here and claim that I know more about football than Ken Austin, because that's ridiculous. But just the way I look at it as a fan, I think it was a big mistake to not have Mike Daly start the year as the team safety and to keep Courtney Steven, where he had excelled the past couple of years, at the wide side corner position, because then that helps with your ratio as well. Now you're starting eight Canadians. If you truly wanted to, because you're starting three on the inside, you're starting those two in the secondary, you're starting Big Teddy, that's six. Andy Fantuzzi is a guaranteed start, that's seven. And so they can start Spencer Watt if they want to, or they could have used another American. Like, I just don't think that at the start of the season that they use their ratio correctly. And I think that maybe Steven doesn't get hurt if he's playing out on the corner as opposed to in the middle at safety. Like, just a lot of different things happened with this team that I don't agree with that has gotten us to this horrible, horrible 6-8 record.
Yeah, we're running out of time. I mean, four more games left. They better make the most of it, because if they don't, we could be missing the playoffs, and that's just a scary thought. I mean, Toronto's on that downward spiral. Ottawa lost. Yes, we're still in it, but there's still a chance that we don't make the playoffs if we don't, win some of these games. I'm hoping for a four-game winning streak. I doubt that will happen, but I got my fingers crossed.
I got my fingers crossed too. The problem is that this team has not shown us anything this year that makes me think they can win four in a row. Maybe they win two of these games, maybe three. Three of them are at home. And when Zach Collaros plays, this team at home is better, although they did not look anywhere near good against the Stampeders when Collaros was in there. And that's another thing we got to add to this long list of complaints is once again, Zach Collaros goes down. It's just crap after crap after crap, man.
I don't know exactly what the injury is. I heard maybe it's a concussion. I thought it was the shoulder at first, just the way that he fell on the ground, with his arm extended, and I thought he might have dislocated his shoulder. But have you heard anything more, like the length of the injury possibly, or is it a concussion, or what have you heard?
I've heard possible concussion. That's about as far as it's gone. Mild concussion was thrown around, which is a term I'm not very happy with. Any concussion is a concussion, period. I don't think it's mild, severe. Concussions are bad. Head injuries are bad. But they do get a bye this week. Maybe this is something where they use mild because it's not considered one of those like super duper serious. I don't know. I'm just thinking maybe he could come back. But let's like, we have to sit here and call a spade a spade. This team has been just as good slash bad with Jeremiah Mazzoli under center as they have been with Zach Collaros. This team, we all expected this team to take off when Collaros got back, and I know we discussed this last week, but they looked good early on, even in some losses. Lost to BC, where they made a massive comeback. Lost to Calgary, where they didn't look too out of place. But at the end of the day, this team is 3-5 with Collaros back there, and they're 3-3 with Mazzoli. So quarterback wasn't the issue with this team. They still turn the ball over too much. Although in this game against Calgary, they actually won the turnover battle, which if you win the turnover battle against a team against Calgary and still lose the game, like you have to capitalize on Calgary. Levi Mitchell's thrown like 6 interceptions in the season. You get 2 of them in this game. Like you have to make hay out of that. And out of all the turnovers they got, they only got 8 points. It just seems that this team cannot get out of its own way. And that's not in any way meant to discredit the job that Calgary did. Come on, they're 12-1-1. We know how good the Stampeders are. Or any of the other teams that the Ticats have lost to this year. But so many times you go back and watch these games, or even when you're watching them live, you're thinking, like, if they don't make this mistake, this team is not good enough to overcome the mistakes they make. And when they can finally get other teams to make mistakes, they're not good enough to not have to capitalize on every single one of those. 8 points off 3 turnovers is pathetic.
Yeah, they're just not moving the ball. You have that confidence. I had that confidence earlier in the season that the offense would move the ball appropriately. They would get down the field. They would score touchdowns. And I don't have that confidence anymore. Every time I watch this offense, I'm thinking, okay, this is probably going to be maybe we'll get one first down and then we'll have to punt it again. It's just not there anymore. Zach hasn't been good. The injuries in the receiving corps doesn't help, but it's not an excuse. He just hasn't been as good as we thought he was. And I'm not sure he's the best quarterback in the league anymore. I don't even think he's top 3. So right now, like, I hope he changes my mind, but I don't think that he's one of the best in the league anymore.
I'm not sure if he's the best quarterback on this team right now. And I know that sounds insane to say, because it's not like Jeremiah Mazzoli went out there and lit the world on fire, but every mistake that Mazzoli made, Zach's making 2. And this team is performing at the exact same level that they did with either quarterback in there. So I know it sounds nuts to say, but I'm not even sure if Zach Collaros right now is the best player that's playing quarterback for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Yeah. Watching Mazzoli play is kind of tough. I mean, he's just so scattered. He's running back like 50 yards on a play, and just like, it's hard to watch, but so is Zach. He's just not making those throws, not making first downs. It's been tough to watch the quarterback play the last, couple weeks. So something has to happen. I don't know if this team can improve or if this is just who they are and they're not a very good football team.
Yeah, and the quarterback's having problems. Usually teams will rely on a running game if the quarterback's not as crisp as they think, but what does this team do? Oh yeah, that's right, they don't run the football. 7 total rushes and 4 of them came from Mazzoli. He was the leading rusher on the team again. Like when you're backup quarterback, and he was a backup for the first half and then he played in the second half because Zach got hurt. If he's your leading rusher week in, week out, you got a problem. And this team just doesn't seem to want to run the football. And I why even dress a running back then? Just dress another receiver stick him in the backfield, or dress a second fullback. Or like, what's the point? What is the point of having a tailback in there if you're giving him 3 carries a game?
I mean, they obviously have no confidence in Ford. Why, like you just said, why sign him? Why put him in the game if they don't want to use him, utilize him at all? 3 carries? Are you kidding me? Like, there needs to be some balance between the passing game and the running game. And we know since Austin's tenure, we've known before Austin's tenure in Hamilton, he doesn't like to run the ball. And that's biting us on the ass.
But it's... I know he's a smart football guy. He has been successful in this league. 4 years as a head coach, 3 Grey Cup appearances, and he's been to the conference final, division final every year. Like, he's not a dumb man. I don't understand why he just abjectly refuses to run the football.
Maybe it's the quarterback mentality, I remember watching Doug Flutie's, what do they call that show? They do the documentaries on NFL Network.
A Football Life.
Yeah. I remember watching that, and he said, if it was up to me, I'd pass the ball every single time. I don't see the point in running it. And I don't think that, Ken Austin and Doug Flutie aren't the same person, obviously, but maybe they have kind of the same mindset on running the ball. Maybe he's just that stubborn. He just doesn't believe in the run game.
Yeah, that could be. Well, that stubbornness is going to get this team into a lot of trouble and could cause him to lose his job at some point, because the complete lack of a run game, like 7 total rushes, and they threw the ball 50 times. Like, I understand they were down in this game, and if this was a one-off or even a two-off in a blowout game where they had to make a comeback, I would accept it. Like, when Jeremiah Mazzulli had all those consecutive completions, they ran the ball like twice in the entire second half, but you're down by so many points, and the passing game was working. Aside from when they were throwing to Andy Fantuz, who I should mention had an absolute amazing football game, 15 catches for 130 yards, that was one catch off the single game record. Like, Andy Fantuz, if you're going to complain about the offense, and we are, he's a guy you can't complain about, because the last 2 weeks with all these injuries to the receiving core, he has stepped up big time. And he's asserting himself once again as maybe the best Canadian pass catcher in this league. He has the most catches in his Ticats career, and he's quickly approaching the most catches he's ever had in a single season in his entire career. And he's almost got at 1,000 yards. He stayed healthy. He's been productive. He's been everything you want out of Andy Fantuz. And these things are going to waste because this team just can't get it together and put together a complementary set of skills on the football field in this offense. It's great that he caught 15 passes and he only had 16 targets. So that's an amazing percentage. But they cannot continue to run the ball with the tailback 3 times in a game.
And on the other side of the spectrum, Terrence Oliver, what the hell was that? I mean, that was a bad game by him. A couple really bad drops. He just didn't produce at all. Very disappointing performance on his part.
Yeah, he did not look good at all. 8 targets, only 3 catches. And as you mentioned, there was one drop in particular. Hit him right in the hands. I guess that's the worst place to hit a receiver. And I don't want to be too hard on Tolliver, because for the majority of this season, when he's been in there, he has been excellent. But yeah, this was definitely – he gets a mulligan for me on this, but this was definitely a really poor performance from him.
Yeah, and not much more to say about the offense. A pretty bland performance, not very exciting football, just really disappointing. It's you think about the Tiger Cats this year and you think offense more than defense. But it's just not there anymore, and I hope all the guys are back soon. Maybe that's a big part of it. I'm sure it is a big part. Tasker's not there, all the receivers, Gable in the backfield, but even when they were in there, they weren't living up to expectations. So just a bad performance by the offense overall, by the whole team.
Yeah, it wasn't just the offense that played like garbage. The defense was there, I guess, is the best thing you could say about it. No pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell at all. They did force those 3 turnovers, 2 interceptions that I mentioned earlier, which is good, but just he had so much time to operate back there. And I know judging your team against the Stampeders is kind of unfair because how good the Stamps are, but in watching them live for the first time this year, the thing I noticed is that they don't necessarily do anything particularly great. They just do everything really well. Like, they're not this. I don't look at this team and think it's overflowing with the best players at each position or that they do anything particularly different than any other team. They just, the way they go out and execute their plays and their game plan is honestly a sight to behold.
I don't really know what else to say about it. It's just tough to watch. I've said it like a couple times before, but it's very, very disappointing. I'm not even mad when I'm watching. I'm just like shocked and I shouldn't be shocked anymore. It just lets you down. They're letting the fans down right now.
Yeah, it's just there was at one point in the game, do you remember the Stamps got a penalty? They were 1st and 20. Jerome Messam rips off like a 25-yard run. Do you remember that play?
Mm-hmm.
There was a kid behind us, I don't know, a couple rows maybe, and he just screams out, "You suck, defense." And all of us around started laughing, and one of the guys sitting next to me was like, "Oh, that got real." And it's like, you know what, kid? You ain't wrong. Like, the defense.
What is with the defense giving up when they get a penalty or whatever? They get a sack. It's 1st and 20. It's 2nd and 19. They just give it up every time. Are they dropping back too much? I don't get it.
Yeah, it makes no sense. So how do you give up 25 yards on a run? I don't care if it's to Jerome Messam, but on a run on 1st and 20? Like, yeah. But this has been a problem all year. This team cannot tackle. How many missed tackles? Next time I watch a Ticats game, it's going to be against Ottawa. I'm going to keep track of all the missed tackles I see.
Yep.
All the whiffs where they, like, all the broken tackles. Like, it seems every single game this team will have a guy wrapped up and someone will go for a big hit or they'll squirm. Like, this team, it can't tackle. And the thing that's bothering me the most, all these mistakes, all the reasons that this team is 6-8, are things that they're doing that goes against everything we've seen the previous 3 years. This team was one of the sounder tackling teams in the league when Ken Austin took over and installed Orlando Stanheuer as the defensive coordinator. They would wrap guys up. They would gang tackle. They would get there. It was never a concern. You'd see a guy on 2nd and 7 catch the ball in the flat, and you knew someone was going to get there and wrap him up. And it's not like this team has seen a ton of changes. The Simone's still there. Davis is still there. Like, Larry Dean has replaced Taylor Reed, but Larry Dean has been phenomenal this year. He's one of the few guys in the defense that you can point to and say he's not part of the problem. But everybody else, it just seems like week in, week out, this team is going completely against the type of team we saw the previous 3 seasons.
Yeah, things just aren't working for them anymore. I mean, you look at the onside punt that they attempted. The guy got downfield, he got his hands right on the ball, can't pull it in. I mean, the things that were working last year and the year before, and even the year before that, aren't working anymore. And I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough to keep watching week after week the same problems. I don't know what the solution is. I can tell you what the problems are. I can tell you those till I'm blue in the face. I don't know how they can fix this. I really don't.
I don't know if they can this season. It might be too far gone. They're kind of scrambling now with the secondary and all that. There might not be a solution this year. We might have to, you know, not pack it in for next year, but it's getting close to that, you know?
Just kind of accept any success this team has as kind of gravy on the old Sunday and go from there, I guess you're saying? Because you're right. I don't know if at this point in the season, 4 games left, if they can make any changes, that'll really make a difference.
And if Claros is out, like we talked about, the offense led by Claros hasn't looked great. But if he's out and Mazzoli's the guy for the rest of the season, I think it's over. I don't think he's out for the rest of the season. I'm just saying.
Yeah, my worry, my big concern is, and we talked about this before we hit the record button, is what if this team, they're probably going to make the playoffs just because the East Division is garbage. Mm-hmm. Even Ottawa in first place is not very good. I don't care that they went to BC and hung with the Lions. They still got beat. The Ticats went to BC and hung with the Lions. It doesn't matter. The East Division from Team 1 to Team 4 is trash. This is a bad, bad division this year. And the Ticats still have an opportunity. They're still sitting in second place, which means a home playoff date. They still have 2 games against Ottawa, which means if they can find a way to win those two, they might finish first in this division, host the East Final, and get back to the Grey Cup, even though we're sitting here with 4 games left in the season, talking about pretty much putting the obituary out for this team. I worry that if they make a mini run here and maybe get to the Grey Cup, that it'll kind of mask all the problems this team has had.
Yeah, and then, you're right. And they won't make the changes needed in the offseason to really take this team to another level. I mean, anything can happen in the playoffs. Anything can happen in the Grey Cup. But, I want to see the best team possible. Grey Cup victory, and I'll be pretty darn happy. I mean, it's been since 1999, but I want to see this team, be the best in the East Division in the league during the regular season, and we're not seeing that right now.
Yeah, I want to see the team that we saw last summer, and I use that as my measuring stick. We've seen how good this team can be, and last summer when they went on that run, that was the team I've been wanting my entire life to see out of the Ticats. I wanted to see them be a team that went in there, you knew they were going to win, they knew they were going to win, and they kicked the living tar out of the teams they were playing. You were there in person. I will always use this as my measuring stick. They went in there against the eventual Grey Cup champions and absolutely destroyed the Eskimos. Like, the score did not indicate how badly Hamilton went in there and just absolutely pounded the Esks. This year, we haven't seen that. Every game they've won has been, with the exception of, the one game against Montreal, I guess, and maybe even the opener against Toronto, they've had to scratch and claw and climb back and fight back and make these massive comebacks. That was never going to be sustainable. You knew that. I knew that. Everyone should have known that. Yeah. I don't know, man. I just look at this team and I'm just at a loss. I'm literally at a loss because is it just losing all these depth guys that has caused this team to go from juggernaut to also-ran?
I don't know, man. I hope that's what it is, and I hope we get them back and then it all clicks. But I have my doubts.
Yeah, I don't see this season ending the Grey Cup drought here in Hamilton. And if they get to the Grey Cup, I'll be excited. I'll be happy, but it comes with a giant dose of I don't know, man. I just don't know. That's kind of the beginning, middle, end of it for me on this. Is I just don't know about this team anymore.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, I think we should touch on Brett Maher's record-setting field goal, just because I want a little light in this podcast of darkness. And he's been up and down this year. I think we can both admit that. But his ups have been a lot more frequent than his downs. And he was, again, maybe he was the MVP of this game for the Ticats. 3 for 3 on field goals. And he hits that big 58-yarder. That was kind of cool to see in person. That's a Ticats record. It breaks the previous record held by Paul Osbaldiston, Justin Medlock, and Bernie Ruoff. They all three of those men had kicked 57-yard field goals. Maher is now the all-time record holder for Ticats kickers. That's was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, he's been a bright spot this year for the most part, and he continues to. I mean, didn't he hit a 58-yarder earlier in the season or 57?
I think it was 57 in Toronto.
Yeah. So I mean, the guy has a leg. It's crazy, like what his length can be kicking field goals.
Way to parse your words very carefully, yeah. There, sir. Yeah, I don't want you on here talking about how much you enjoy the length of players.
but yeah, I mean, he's a dependable field goal kicker, and Medlock went out, but I don't think we've missed a beat without him.
No, we haven't, and we're starved for dependability anywhere we can find it. So if it's going to come from the kicker, I'm going to give him props, because he's the guy who every week seems to, with the exception of last week against the Saskatchewan Roughriders, he's not the reason this team is not winning ball games. So, hey, didn't have a punt blocked again this week. Maybe they've got that issue settled. So maybe we can look at Maher kicking field goals and not having punt blocks, and we can kind of say maybe this team is going to move in some areas in the right direction. But I think this is a, you know, one step forward, nine steps back type of thing.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
There's one other thing from this game that kind of irked me that I want to talk about. I'm done, dude, with the PI and the illegal contact challenges. This game was a boring football game, and I'm sure Stampeders fans don't think that way, but I was sitting in the crowd bored out of my mind watching this game. And then we get these challenges on these ticky-tacky calls, and it's the Ticats never should have challenged the pass interference call that they got, because after they showed the replay on the screen, they showed it, and they finally showed another angle where you can clearly see the defensive back, whose name I honestly don't remember. I don't care who it was. Clearly tugging on the jersey, that's a foul. And then there was an illegal contact call in the end zone that looked to me like it was so ticky-tacky. You can tell me more because you were watching on television, but from where I was sitting in the replays they showed on the screen, it didn't look like much. And I'm just tired of these games being slowed down by these stupid, stupid challenges. We saw in the Ottawa game, or I saw, because you didn't watch the Ottawa game, did you?
No, I didn't watch the Hamilton game live either. We taped it, and then we watched it when I got home. Okay, and that was during the Ottawa-BC game.
So in the Ottawa game, there was Ottawa got called for a 15-yard penalty, and Rick Campbell threw out a frivolous challenge on a pass interference call. He said, "Oh, Chris Williams got interfered with, so let's challenge this." It wasn't even close to pass interference. The defender was there, and would have, if the ball would have got to Williams, would have made a great play. It wasn't PI, but it's this challenge. It takes like 2 minutes to get this stuff settled up. It's boring the game. It's making the game slower. I was watching the NFL, and I don't like to compare the CFL to the NFL, but I was watching the NFL. I'm a 49ers fan. I was watching the Niners and Cowboys play, and there was a very, very clear pass interference call that should have been made on San Francisco. Dak Prescott threw it to Jason Witten. Witten actually catches the ball, which is kind of incredible. But before the ball gets there, you can tell live before the ball gets there, the guy that tackled Witten hits him before it gets there, and very clearly should have been called pass interference. The announcers, they mention it. They go, "Ah, look like he got there earlier." They show the replays like, "Oh, he definitely did get there earlier." They show Jason Garrett, the Dallas Cowboys head coach, in sidelines talking to the ref, demonstrating, basically saying, "Look, he got there early. You could tell because he moved like this." And that was it. They moved on. It was a controversial no call, and it didn't have it like. But it didn't slow the game down. It was like no call was made. They just moved on to the next play. And like every single time that a big play happens in this league, be it defense or offense, you wait. You, especially on defense, when it comes to illegal contact and pass interference, I'm sitting there waiting. Every time I see some good defense, I'm looking going, is the opposing coach throwing a flag? Is the opposing coach throwing a flag? That's not how we should be watching the game of football, man.
No, and I don't think that's it's going to go away. Like maybe they might take out the legal contact review out of it, but I'm not sure. I just think that it's going to keep going like this. And I will say that I do believe that the CFL on average is shorter than NCAA football and NFL football. So, slowing the game down, it is, but it's still faster than both those leagues.
It is definitely faster than college football, I will say that. I've watched some college football games that took nearly 4 hours to
Take
play.
forever. I don't know what it is. Like,
I don't get, I really don't get it either. I don't think there's many different rules from the pro, either CFL or NFL in college, but they always block off about 3.5 hours for a college football game. When you look at your TV guide on your box, it's 3 hours for a pro football game. I don't understand what the difference is.
No, neither do I. I mean, it's not like you look at college basketball, and I believe they have 20-minute
20-minute
half.
halves, yeah, instead of
Yeah.
12-minute quarters. College football plays
And
15-minute quarters.
yeah, so it doesn't make any sense. But
No,
anyways.
it just feels to me like the CFL makes its mark by being exciting. And we've seen some great games this year, do not get me wrong. Labor Day between the Argos and Ticats was awesome. That Winnipeg and Calgary game a few weeks ago was phenomenal. This week, the BC Ottawa game was actually really, really good. We've been privy to some really good games, but that used to be the norm. The norm used to be exciting, fast-paced, back-and-forth football, and now it's being
Could
bogged
be,
down.
or maybe it was that every game wasn't televised.
Well, that could be. And I'm not saying the CFL is boring football. I'm just saying, as a fan sitting in the stands watching what I thought was already a boring game, adding this element to it just made it worse. And look, I just think we allow players to make mistakes. And yes, when players make mistakes for the Ticats in a game, we call them out on the show. And we allow coaches to make mistakes. And yes, we call them out on the show. We allow them to be human and make errors. We don't allow that with our referees. And I understand referees, they're the ones in charge. So it's kind of like if a cop screws up, you want to be harsher with them than, say, if just a regular everyday civilian screws up. But we have to let refs ref, essentially. Like, it to me, I almost get to the point now where I'd rather a bad call, no call happen without a challenge than to make sure we get everything right. Because at the end of the day, and this is the thing with these judgment calls, like pass interference and illegal contact, we're never going to get a consensus on if the call was right. We
No.
couldn't get consensus on whether or not Mike Filer moving the football was a correct call or not. We're never going to all agree on this. So if the point is to get the calls correct, and still we're coming up with people who are like, I don't know if that was the right call, why even bother? Like, just let's accept the fact that there's going to be mistakes. I'm not saying get rid of replay and the challenge system altogether. I still think it's good that possession, like catching the football or a turnover or a scoring play, I like that all of those are still reviewable, and I think they should be reviewable because those, I think, are turning point plays. But an illegal contact call midway through the second quarter, I don't think that's a play that you have to really care about.
Maybe they should just reduce the coaches to have one challenge a game. I mean,
I've
I
heard
think,
that before. I've heard that before. Maybe that is a solution.
I mean, because two challenges in a game, that wouldn't be that bad, and they would be forced to hold on until there's something that really, stands out to them. They wouldn't be throwing the flag on maybe there was legal contact on Joe Blow or whatever. They would wait until there's an important time of the game and throw it then. And they knew that there was a penalty because they're not going to waste it. So maybe that's an option. I don't know if that's going to happen, but maybe that's something they'll talk about in the offseason.
I am open for any solution, honestly, any solution that will change this for the better, to make this game just a better product on the field for the fans in the stadiums and for the fans watching at home. Any changes, I will be for. Like, just let's find a way to fix this. I'm not saying I'm an expert and my way is the right way, but I'm just tired of seeing this. I'm tired of these frivolous challenges, especially being just bogging down these games to the point where they're not unwatchable. And I'm not going to be one of those guys who's like, if they don't change, I'm never watching a game again. I think anyone who says that is probably not a fan to begin with. You're not going to stop watching a game because of one bad call and one bad game, or because one game was boring because of this. But I still think that this league can be better, should be better, and there's a way to go about it. I just think that there's certain aspects of this challenge system that need to go. And maybe you're right. Maybe that's a great idea. One challenge per game. And if you get it right, then you get a second one. And if you don't, then that's it. Because maybe they will be more judicious with what they do and don't challenge, because something has to change, and that's all I know.
no real good segue into this, but what did you think about the Ken Austin punishment?
Was it really a punishment?
Well, I'd say $10,000 is a punishment.
$10,000, absolutely. That is a punishment.
That's
care.
A large
I don't
amount,
care how rich you are. $10,000 coming out of your pocket is not fun.
Yeah, but Ken Austin makes a quite a you know good amount of money, but you know that hits the pocketbook pretty well.
Yeah, but it was the non-suspension. I don't even know how to really like he was banished from the sidelines for the game against Calgary. I don't really understand what the point of that was. It seemed like they tried to find a middle ground between suspending him and not. From everything that's surrounded this, and we talked about it last week when the incident happened. Apparently, the referee said yes, it was definitely accidental. But at the same time, I think we both agreed that he had to be punished in some way. And I think we even talked about a one-game suspension. If they were going to suspend him, my idea would have been, because it happened, I think we recorded last Wednesday and it came out Wednesday afternoon, that would have been too late in the week, I think, to suspend him. Suspend him for the following game. Suspend him for the game against Ottawa. Then he has a whole week where he's away. Someone else has to do the implementation of all that stuff. And then he's off the sidelines for one game. And then you have a whole week where he's serving a punishment for a crime. But then again, maybe they did this because they didn't think that this was a suitable punishment for the crime he committed because it was accidental. So I don't know. It's a lot of people laughed at it. A lot of people called the CFL Bush League for this and all this other sorts of stuff. But I'll have everyone who listens to this be reminded that Bill Belichick in 2012 deliberately grabbed an official in a game after the New England Patriots played the Baltimore Ravens, and he was only fined. He was fined $50,000 because obviously Bill Belichick makes a lot more than Ken Austin, but he was only fined. He was not suspended for it. So, and that was much more harsh. Like what Belichick did was it looked like he was trying to grab the ref to like punch him in the face. And he wasn't going to do that, but he was very forceful with how he grabbed him versus what Austin did. I think the punishment kind of fits the crime in this scenario.
Yeah. No one would dare to call the NFL Bush. I mean, you can't do that.
Well, and I saw some people complain. It's like, oh, now it's going to be open season on officials. And it's like, that's ridiculous. Like,
I mean, they thought the same thing with Daron Carter when he walked into Rick Campbell. Oh, it's why do we have the, you know, sidelines on the same teams on the same sidelines? And it's going to be, you know, open season for that too, and that never happened. That's
yeah,
not
how, yeah, exactly. How many players have run into coaches since then? Zero. They said the same thing about the Ken Austin Dave Stallo thing last year. If you don't hit Austin up hard, we're going to see coaches going after players. How many people have we seen after that? Zero. How many in interactions with referees and coaches in the NFL have we seen since Belichick grabbed? And this was a replacement ref. Remember that. It was a replacement ref that Belichick grabbed. So those are guys that weren't respected anyway. How many incidents have we seen between physical contact between coaches and refs in the NFL since then? Zero. This is not – it's not open season on officials because Ken Austin was pissed off, threw his hand out, and accidentally slapped a referee. We're not going to see – Rick Campbell or Jacques Chapdelain or Wally Buono is not going to go out there and start physically abusing referees because Ken Austin only got fined $10,000 and was only banished from the sidelines. Like, that's just an idiotic complaint.
Yeah. I mean, Jacques Chapdelain isn't going to put anyone in the sharpshooter or jump off the top rope or anything. Everything's going to be okay.
Now, you know what, though? If that did happen, I would probably pitch in to help pay his fine.
That would be pretty sweet.
And the funny thing about this is, I don't know if you saw this, but this whole thing stemmed from that idiotic Mike Filer penalty that the league admitted was bogus. So I took a lot of flack. I don't know if you did, but I took a lot of flack from fans talking about how I'm whining about it, how I should shut up about it. It was the right call. The league came out. Drew Edwards wrote a piece for Three Down Nation. Little tidbit in there that the league had quietly admitted that the Filer call was bogus. So I know it means nothing now, but I just want that to get out there so that all the people who are harassing me about complaining about it can shut the hell up, because the league's admitted it was the wrong call. And I wasn't only complaining because I'm a Ticats fan. I didn't like the call. I wouldn't like the call if I saw it again. League admitted it was garbage. Let's move on. So we kind of touched on it a little bit. What do you think about the Johnny Adams trade?
I like it. I think that he can be a top-notch defender in the secondary. He kind of fell out of favor in Winnipeg. I'm not sure if that was because of his play or his attitude or whatever, but I like the move. I think we need all the help we can get in the secondary, and you know, he's a proven player in this league, so hopefully he can find that form that he had last year and really help out these guys.
Well, I'm looking at the players this team could have in the secondary if Johnny Adams stays. I'm not sure what his contract situation is like. I have read and heard that maybe he's looking at the NFL for next season, but after the season he's put together this year, I can't imagine NFL teams are going to be knocking down his door. If they can get him back in on this team, think of this the secondary. This is the secondary only that we have been brutal with all season. Courtney Stephen, Craig Butler, Mike Daly, Emmanuel Davis, Johnny Adams, Rico Murray, Johnny Sears. That's seven really good football players. If you can find some combination of those seven to make five guys that can start, that's a pretty good secondary.
Yeah, on paper it is. You almost forget that Johnny Sears Jr. is on this team. He's been out for so long.
He gets hurt every year, it seems.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with him this year? I don't even know.
It was a hip injury or something. I remember he got hit in the game against, I think it was Edmonton, the comeback game. Mm. I think he took a shot in that, and he's been out ever since. So, same thing happened last year. Got hurt early in the season and missed pretty much the rest of the year. But just if you look at those names and all those guys, it's like you could piece together a very talented secondary there. And maybe it is a scheme issue. I don't know. But there's a lot of good name players there. And you add Johnny Adams to the – like, that is a good, good secondary. Maybe not the best in the league or anything like that, but I've said long ago, this team just has to be average in the secondary for it to be good. And like Emmanuel Davis, I don't even think we talked about him much when we talked about the game, but he had another interception, and like he's been playing great. He's second in the league in interceptions again this year. Had another five. That's what he had last year. Like, he's been playing out of his mind. He's been playing great. You add all these guys together, and like, this is a good sec. I don't know if Adams is going to stay. I hope he does, and I hope he can refine his form. And if he does, that Ticats secondary could be a strength of this team in 2017, which is crazy to think we're saying that after we just spent, a good 40 minutes calling them garbage?
Yeah, I mean, like you just said, it, all those players are good players. They've proven themselves over the years and put them all together in pretty good secondary. So maybe at some point they will all be together on this team this year, and we can,
maybe get a preview of 2017.
Yeah, or put together some wins in 2016 and make a run here. I mean, I'm pretty down on the team right now, but I haven't given up hope. I'm not throwing in the towel yet. So hopefully that happens and we can be better in the secondary, make cover guys, make the tackles, and just help out this team.
So another piece of CFL news, according to Kirk Penton of The Sun, the Argos released Vidal Hazelton. So
And more.
Oh, who else have you heard?
Shinetti tweeted out that Hazelton, Elliott, Gurley, and Phil Bates.
What?
Yeah, that's what Shinetti tweeted out.
They just basically released their entire starting wide receiver corps. Half an hour
ago, 40 minutes ago, he tweeted out.
Are Gurley, Elliott, Hazelton? Are you kidding me?
No, that's what he said. Sources.
I'm looking at it right now. Holy smokes!
Yeah, it's not official or anything, but that's what he's usually pretty good. So
I was ready to talk about bringing in Vidal Hazelton, but give me Torrey Gurley, please.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, he's been playing awesome this year. He's a top notch receiver. So it's very surprising. I mean, that is a lot of receivers just gone.
So they have Deontay Spencer still there. They have Andre Dury is still there. They have who else? Kenny Shaw, I guess. Maybe Levi Noel, my U of T alumnus friend. Not actual friend, but we went to the same school. So I do cheer for him, even though he plays for the Argos. Maybe he's going to get more touches on offense. Have the Argos just given up on the season?
You'd have to. I mean, it appears that way with all those cuts. I mean, yes, they still have Spencer and Shaw, but those are similar players. They're shorter, quicker guys. They just gave up all their height pretty much in Gurley, Elliott, and Hazelton. So I don't know what the hell's going on, but that is a shocking amount of releases in a receiver's corps if it's true.
Well, you've Hazelton, Elliott, and Gurley are the reason that Chad Owens, like Deontay Spencer more than those three, but that's the reason Chad Owens isn't with the Argos anymore. Because they thought that they had these young guys. You literally just blew my mind, dude. Like, I can't believe my head is still attached to my body because of what just happened there. I'm shocked. I thought we were going to talk about Vidal Hazelton, but holy smokes, I had this whole case laid out to why Vidal Hazelton should sign with the team. Like, he may be a little bit of a head case, but he has a history with Zach Caleros. They both played together at Cincinnati. The Ticats are pretty thin at wide receiver. Bringing him in with the familiarity with Zach would be good. They've brought in problem guys before with Sinkfield, and he kind of turned it around. But man, that's Phil Bates less so. But those three names being on the free agent board at this point in the season, their agents have got to be fielding phone calls left and right.
You'd think so. I mean, let's bring them all in.
Bring them in. Hey, here's the thing. All their contracts have been guaranteed, if I'm not mistaken. We're well past the point where even guys as young into the league as they are would have their contracts guaranteed. So just bring them in for pennies on the dollar for the rest of the season and let's ball out.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be highly motivated, I assume, to play the Argonauts or just be on the rival team. Like, it's really shocking, that move by Milanovic and Barker in the Argonauts camp. It's just, yeah, like you said, it's mind-blowing.
I know that there were some rumblings after the game against Montreal that Milanovic was pissed off at a lot of players, that he had noticed a lack of effort, a lack of desire, a lack of caring. Did they just really misevaluate all these guys? Wasn't there like a giant TSN piece on these guys at the start of the season or at the end of the last season calling them the big three, comparing them to like LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, and now none of them are employed by the team that brought them into the league? And we were all talking last year about, man, Jim Barker really knows how to find wide receivers. Like, that's it. He does that like Wally Buono does with quarterbacks. Scott Milanovic can turn quarterbacks into spin them out of from straw into gold. And I guess this is live podcasting, my friend. This is I'm kind of at a loss for words. I know I've said a lot, but I don't really know.
If it was a statement to the team that, you know, you better step up your game or this could happen to you. I mean, usually that's just one player, not three or four of your starting receivers. So yeah, it's crazy.
I have a very, very, very sneaking suspicion that you and I next week, when we sit down to record the show, are going to be talking about three very good receivers being signed by three CFL teams.
Yeah, the contenders.
Ottawa doesn't really need receivers, so I can't really see them going. But maybe they, again, who knows what these guys are going to cost? Maybe they can grab a Torrey Gurley and stick him on the wide side where he played in Toronto and had 10 touchdowns last year. Like, that is incredible production from a wide side wide receiver. Like, you don't get that from guys. I don't think Andy Fantuzzo scored 10 touchdowns in the season any year in his career. So to get that out of a guy who's playing at the furthest part of the field, like, man, like John Chiles, I like that signing when they brought him in. I think he's been okay. Junior Collins hasn't really done much, but man, oh man, if they can get just one of those three, let alone two or all, I can't see them getting all three, honestly. I don't think there's room for that, but if they can get one of them, man, maybe this offense can start clicking.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, my number one choice would be Gurley just because of the way that he's played this season. I think that he was, you know, he was on fire a couple weeks ago, but yeah, it'd be nice to get a new addition to the receiving corps, even though I think there's more additions that could be made on this team in different positions. But I mean, hey, if they're out there and you get them cheap, why not?
Hey, look, if Doug Flutie would have gotten released, or not Doug Flutie, Darren Flutie. Jesus Christ, I can't believe I made that mistake. I deserve a slap on the wrist for that one. Maybe I should get a $10,000 fine and or 10,000 nickel fine and be off the sidelines for the next game for making that mistake. But if Darren Flutie would have got released this late in the season, every single team would have done anything to get him. And I'm not saying these guys are Darren Flutie, but Hazleton was the East Division's rookie of the year last year. Gurley, 10 touchdowns. Elliott has played well. Like, wow, just three talented guys out on the open market. And like I said, I got to think their agents' phones are ringing off the hook.
Yeah, you'd have to think so.
So I know that we were not going to do a bozo this week because we couldn't come up with one. Do you want to give it to Jim Barker again for cutting all these guys?
Yeah, maybe a double bozo again to Milanovic. I mean, because I'm sure that he had some decision. I'm sure he came to Barker and said, these guys aren't giving a full effort. So, I mean, maybe that's the case, but that's a lot of talent to give away, you know, just for nothing. So, yeah, I'll give it a last minute bozos. I'll give it to Barker and Milanovic. And, you know, I love giving bozos to the Argos.
Crazy. This is absolute craziness. And I'm so glad that this happened as we were recording / before we recorded so that we can actually talk about this, because I don't know if I could have sat on this for a week without saying something. I think I might have had to call you up and say, we're doing a supplemental show just to talk about these moves.
Yeah. It's a big news. I mean, I didn't see it coming, that's for sure.
No, when they announced the Hazleton release, I was like, okay, he's been a healthy scratch for a lot of the season, and maybe they are making an example of someone by saying, look, this can happen to anyone, like you kind of mentioned before. Seeing all these guys go was a surprise. So we have no Ticats preview this week because the team is getting a much needed, I won't say well-deserved, but much needed bye week. So obviously there's no game to talk about for this upcoming week. So the time to just roll into those CFL picks, Mike.
Let's do it.
All right, so same as it ever was. Top three in our pick'em group stays the same after week 15. We got Cappy D in first place with 8,684 points. We got Andrew Hammy A-hole sitting in second, 7,679 points. Then we got our buddy Mark Fender guy sitting there in third at 7,336 points. I remain stuck in fourth place, 7,136 points, just 200 points again behind Mark, which means we must have had the exact same picks last week. It's like, I can't crack this top three. It's killing me. You, sir, though, congratulations, made a move up the standings. You were in 19th last week. You moved up to 16th with 4,599 points. Hey, any movement is good movement.
Yeah, that's true.
So let's just get into these games. First game up, Friday night in our nation's capital, we have the Saskatchewan Roughriders, fresh off their bye and two consecutive wins, heading to play the Ottawa Redblacks. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I got to go with Ottawa. Yes, Saskatchewan has looked better in the last couple of weeks, but Ottawa hasn't been looking great either. I hope Saskatchewan gets a win because obviously, in the standings and all that, but I'm going to have to go with Ottawa for pick'em. They're at home. The offense looked really good from what I saw against BC, so Redblacks are my pick.
Okay, quick pause for a second. Simone Lawrence tweeted to Vidal Hazelton that he always loved him. So it looks like Simone is starting the recruitment early on Twitter to get at least one of these Argos released wide receivers to the hammer. He did this with Terrell Sinkfield. These guys, him and Brandon Banks, did it with Ted Laurent over the offseason. So Simone's doing his best to try to get some of these guys, at least one of them, to sign with the black and gold. So I just wanted to get that out there. I'm logging off Twitter. I will log on before we leave in case any one of these guys does get signed already, but I can't see that happening. But so you said shaking Ottawa?
Yeah.
I'm going to take the Riders. You know what? To hell with it. Let's switch it up. I did not have a pick down here because I did legitimately think this was a tough one to pick. It does look like Saskatchewan is kind of coming together under Chris Jones. Like the win against Hamilton, good drive at the end to win that. The week before against Edmonton, and I know Hamilton and Edmonton aren't great teams, but neither is Ottawa. So I might regret doing this, but I'm going to take the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in this one. And I know the people in Ottawa are probably going to think I'm only picking Saskatchewan because I hate Ottawa, but I don't know. If Ottawa blows them out and wins this game, I won't be surprised. But yeah, I'm gonna roll the dice, and I'm going to take the Riders.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm probably going to regret that at the end of the week when I go like 1-3 in these picks. So the next game, Saturday afternoon, we have the BC Lions heading to Investors Group Field to take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is a huge game, especially for playoff seeding. These two teams neck and neck, BC in second, Winnipeg in third. These two teams play, I believe, back-to-back. I think it's this one. I think they play next week. So big, big set of games for these two squads. Who do you like in this one, Michael?
I'm going to take BC. Jennings keeps impressing me. His deep ball is just one of the best in the league. They really, were very productive on offense last game. Obviously, they scored 40 points. And I think Winnipeg's bubble has burst a little bit. They lost that close game against Calgary, which arguably they should have won. And then they lost Edmonton the next week. So I think maybe Winnipeg is on a little bit of a downward spiral and BC's on an going upwards, so I'm going to take BC.
Man, I love watching Jonathan Jennings play football. He makes, as his career progresses, he now has 19 starts in his career. Every game he gets better and better. There's ups and downs, but those ups are way more frequent than those downs. He's just so much fun to watch. Manny Arsenault, I don't know if you remember, but last year I had him on my fantasy team in our league, and I ripped him on this show after the first bit of the season when he was just doing nothing. And he was out there chirping, and he was talking, and he was doing dick all on the field. And I said, you know what, to hell with this guy. Man, is he a baller. I don't know what happened. Maybe it's just the change of quarterback getting Jennings in there. But he has been awesome. I got to go with the BC Lions as well. No disrespect to Winnipeg. I still think Winnipeg's a good team. I think Winnipeg is going to definitely make the playoffs. I think they might be a tough out, but I think you're right. Maybe that loss to Calgary kind of burst their bubble a little bit. And I think the Lions go into Winnipeg and get the win and kind of solidify themselves as that number two team, both in the West and in the CFL in general. But I think that's going to be a hell of a ball game. Jonathan Jennings, man, what a fun dude to watch. We got a doubleheader, Thanksgiving Monday. We got the holiday Monday. So we got two games that day. I always like this. I love when they do the doubleheaders on Thanksgiving Monday because get to sit down, get to watch some football, get to watch some more football, then get to watch an NFL game on Monday night. I love it. So the first game is in Montreal where the Eskimos take on the Owls. Mike, who you got?
I got to go with the Eskimos. They're on the – they look pretty good the last 2 weeks. And, yes, Montreal had a great game against the Argos. Maybe they might be making a little push. I obviously don't think they're going to make the playoffs or anything, but I'm just going to take the Eskimos because I think that they've finally turned it around a bit in Edmonton.
I'm with you. I think the Eskimos win this one as well. I think Montreal got the one-game bump of having a new coach in there. They had the bye week to implement things. I think they come back down to earth. I think Edmonton's defense has stepped up. I think their offense is starting to gel a little bit better. They clearly rely on those two receivers, but when they put up 200-plus yards a week combined, you can rely on them. I like the Eskimos to take this one as well. Last game, also Monday afternoon. I think the first one's at 1 and the second one's at 4, so awesome. The Calgary Stampeders are now heading to take on the much more depleted Toronto Argonauts. Mike, there's no way you're taking the Argos in this one, right?
No, I can't. Calgary's been the best team in the league by far for a long time. I'm not a big fan of Mitchell, but I think he's a hell of a player, hell of a quarterback. That, you know, offense, defense, everything on that team is just phenomenal. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to be crazy to take the Argos in this one, I think. So I'll take the Stamps.
I'm taking the Argos. I'm kidding. Not a chance. Not a chance. I wouldn't have taken them even if they didn't release half their roster. No, yeah. I don't think for the rest of the season I can pick against Calgary. I like I said, I watch this team live, and they don't do every – like it's just
crisp. They just win.
They just go out there, and they execute their game plan, and they win football games. And if I'd be surprised to see them lose again this year. So I think we were all foolish for thinking, oh, man, change the head coach. Maybe they take a little downturn. This team is clicking just like it ever has. Calgary, I think, in a walk, honestly. I took all four road teams in this. I think I'm going to regret that. That Saskatchewan pick now is looking awfully bad. But you know what? Fortune favors the bold, as I'm fond of saying. So if the Riders win that, I think people are going to look at me as a genius instead of an idiot.
Yeah, it could go either way. You could be a dumbass or a genius.
Yeah, well, I'm usually a dumbass, but I'll take genius this week. So we didn't do questions last week. I held them off to this week. You ready to get into some question stuff here?
Yeah.
So we got a couple. The big one I'm going to save till the end because I think that's the more fun one. We got a couple here from a commenter on the Three Downs Nation comment section by the name of Andy, who asked us a couple questions about the running game. I think we can kind of combine these into one question. So the two questions are this, Mike. Do you see the Ticats pounding the rock more? And is CJ Gable the answer at running back?
I don't see them pounding the rock more just based on the history. And yes, I think CJ Gable is the answer at running back. I think he's their best option. He's looked good when he's been given the opportunity, but who knows if he's going to be given the ball, you know, more than five times a game once he comes back. His injury troubles, yes, have been a problem over the years, and it continues to be a problem, but I'm not ready to give up on him yet. I think when he's in there, he's a stellar running back, and he can make a difference.
Yeah, there's not much debate here. I don't think they're going to pound the rock. They haven't for how long? I don't expect anything to happen, change overnight. I think when we got this question, it was on the heels of the Ross Scheuermann outburst, which, funny to call it an outburst when he had like 16 carries for like 79 yards. But when it comes to running the football in Hamilton, that is a massive outburst. I think after that, maybe they would change the way that they do things. But in the last couple of weeks, they've reverted back to being the team they always have. 7 carries this week, 7 carries week before that. I don't see them pounding the rock more. I just think it goes against Austin's philosophy. Like you said, he's an old quarterback and the whole Doug Flutie thing. And as far as CJ Gable goes, I do think he's the answer at running back. I just don't think he's been used. They've wasted him when he's been in there. Yeah, the injury problems are obviously an issue, but when he's in there, he can produce. We saw it in his rookie season how good this guy can be. I think he had like 1,300 total yards, 12 touchdowns. Like, this guy is a baller if you give him a chance to go out there and make plays. They just don't use him for some reason, but if he's given the opportunities, I think he can absolutely be the answer at running back. I think when it comes to running backs based on pure talent, CJ Gable might be a guy that you put in there as an all around back in the top echelon of this league.
Yeah, I agree. With when he's in there, he's one of the best. So, you know, we saw the one game, I think it was against the Argos, he just, you know, was running over people. He was running with speed, with determination, and really, you know, throwing his body around, you know, running over people. So if he's at the top of his game, he's one of the best. So, yeah, I like CJ Gable. I always will. Maybe his time is coming to an end just because of the injury troubles, but I'd love to see him back in there soon.
Yeah, I hope he gets a chance to go in there and prove that he can be the man for this team. So our last question, final question for the week, comes from frequent question asker Adam, who we love getting his questions because they're usually pretty good. He was the one that asked us close to 10 weeks ago now, at the one-third mark of the season, what our award winners were. He gave this question to us a couple weeks ago, wanted to ask us who our award winners for both the league and the team were. So I say we give them now. We got the time because of the bye week. So let's start with most outstanding special teams player. Mike, who do you have for the league and who do you have for the Ticats?
Well, Ticats, I got to go Mahar. I think that he's, you know, been very productive, been very accurate on his field goal kicking. His punting's been really good. So I'm going to have to give it to him over Speedy B because he just, Banks hasn't been the impact player that he has been in past years, and that might not be on him. That might be on the blockers in front of him, but he just hasn't produced like he has in the past years. So, Mahar for that. And special teams wise in the league, you know, earlier on, Chris Rainey was really tearing it up, but, you know, he's kind of fell off in the return game a bit. So, you know, I think that accuracy-wise, his kicker, Paradis or whatever you want to call him, has been top-notch. Medlock's been great at kicking. But you know what? I'm going to go surprise here. I'm going to go Mahar as well. I think that he just played so well in special teams, kicking the ball, field goal-wise, and punting it. So I'm going to go both with Mahar.
Wow, okay. He is my pick for the Ticats Team Awards for every reason you said. And the same reason, initially I had Brandon Banks written down here, but he's kind of slowed down and hasn't been the returner that we've seen in years past. But for the league, I went with Medlock. Chris Rainey's had a good year, but the return game for teams has been kind of hit or miss. If Kevin Fogg had not had five or four return touchdowns called back, he would absolutely be my pick for this award, because the guy, like, you got to feel, at some point I want to see him get a return touchdown and score and have it count. Because four TDs returned back, you got to feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, that's tough. I know that Gizmo Williams had a bunch call back on his career, but two, like, in one season, or not even a full season, that four call back, that's tough.
That is tough. And, like, Gizmo had all those called back, sure. Brandon Banks had him called back, but he's also had them score. These are the first four kick return touchdowns that this kid will have scored. All four have been called back. I feel bad for him. But my pick is Justin Medlock, man, from Winnipeg. I think he has been – we made fun of him when – or made fun of Winnipeg, really, when he signed there, going, like, $175,000 for a kicker. Holy smokes, has he been worth the money there? Just – he continues to be Justin Medlock, and sometimes we don't, I think, value consistency as much as we should, but yeah, Justin Medlock's my pick there. Most outstanding rookie. This is a tough one. Mike, who do you like for both?
I'm going to have to go, you know, we talked about it before we recorded, it's tough to pick a Hamilton player for Rookie of the Year, but I'm going to have to go with Revenberg. He's just been in there for a couple games. He's, you know, produced pretty well, I think. It's hard to tell on offensive line. But yeah, I got him with the Ticats. And is Roosevelt a rookie? Naaman Roosevelt? Was he there last year?
For Saskatchewan, no, he was there last year. That was the big thing, is people were ticked off that Jamel Richardson was starting when Roosevelt had looked great in camp. He got into a few games at the end of last year. So sadly, no, Mike, Naaman Roosevelt is not a rookie.
Well, that was my pick, so yeah. Okay, too bad.
So I literally have four Ticats. I literally wrote down shrug emoji, because until you mentioned Brandon Revenberg before the show, I could not come up with a single person. Like, he kind of gets it by default almost, because he's the only rookie that's seen significant action. I think we did this before. I gave it to Travis Lee, but that guy hasn't seen the field even when he did. I think like twice since then, so he had to go. So yeah, I'll side with you with Revenberg. My most outstanding rookie, Taylor Loeffler, from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Holy smokes. This guy, mid-round draft pick, I think he went in the third round. People were worried about his injury history when he was at UBC. This kid, as soon as he got inserted into starting lineup for the Bombers, has been phenomenal. He reminds me kind of that Craig Butler, Rob Hitchcock type player, and anyone who knows me knows that is the highest compliment I can give a player, especially someone who plays safety in the CFL. I think Taylor Loeffler's been great, so he is my choice for most outstanding rookie.
Yeah, he's been great back there. So that's surprising, you know, like you said, third round pick. That's surprised that he's starting this year, but he's done a great job. So yeah, that's a good pick.
All right, most outstanding Canadian, Mike. Who you got for both the Ticats and for the CFL?
I got double time Fantuz. Both. I think that he's had a remarkable bounce back season. He's been healthy for most of the year. He's almost at 1,000 yards, 926 yards on the year so far. He's gonna get 1,000. You know, five touchdowns for him. I got Fantuz for both.
Yeah, I think people are gonna call us homers, but I'm with you there too, especially after these last two games that he has played, where he has basically taken the team and put it on his back. And they haven't won, unfortunately, but he's not the reason why. And this guy has been phenomenal. He's been healthy all season. He's having maybe the best year of his career outside the year he actually won Most Outstanding Canadian in 2010 with Saskatchewan when he led the league in receiving. This guy's just been awesome. So, again, consistency. I know these are outstanding player awards, and I know there's been a lot of great Canadians out there. Sean Gore was great. Andrew Harris was really playing well until he got hurt. Jerome Messam obviously will be in the conversation, and there's a host of others. Taylor Loeffler, even as a rookie, could be in this conversation for the Blue Bombers. So there's a ton of great Canadians playing ball this year, but yeah, Fantuz is going to get the love from me. All right, Mike, most outstanding defensive player, who you got?
I'm going to go Homer again. I'm going to go John Chick.
Boom, got the same. So just give them the reasons why, because they're probably the exact same as mine.
Yeah, I mean, he's been all over the field. 10 sacks, I think he has. Close to the league lead, so he's my pick. Maybe it's a bit of a homer pick because I'm just a big fan of his. So yeah, John Chick.
Yep, John Chick's my guy too. For all those reasons you said, near the top of the league in sacks. I think he's tied for second now. I think Sean Lemon's got the lead. So he's just been again a model of consistency, and he didn't do much against the Stampeders, but defensive linemen lead the league over. Don't do much against the Calgary Stampeders, so I'm not going to hold that against them. And yeah, I'm sure you can make a case for Charleston Hughes. You can make a case for a ton of guys. Most guys in Calgary you can make a case for all these awards. Like, I didn't put most outstanding linemen down here because I'm just going to say whomever the nominee from Calgary is going to win it because of how great they've been. But yeah, John Chick, man, just makes me look foolish almost every single week with my worry that he had lost a step. So yeah, for that, maybe for that alone, for making me look like a dummy, this is my mea culpa by handing him my two-thirds of the year Most Outstanding Defensive Player Award. Okay, Mike, MOP, who do you got for the Ticats, and why do you have Bo Levi Mitchell for the league?
You have to go with Bo on this one. You know, earlier in the season, I said I'm not really impressed by his play on this podcast, but he's changed my mind. He leads the league in touchdown passes. He's second in the league in passing yards, just behind Riley. Riley's close. I mean, Riley has had an outstanding year. Almost 5,000 yards passing for Riley, and he's just behind Mitchell in passing TDs. And he has 6 rushing TDs. So all that said, I still have to give it to Bo just because of how well Calgary's played. I know it's not most valuable player, but you have to, put that into consideration. So I got Bo for most outstanding player, and most outstanding player for the Ticats is a tougher one. I'm going to have to go with, I could say Fantuz, but I don't know about that. You know, I'm going to go defensive player and say Emmanuel Davis. He's just stood out. You know, he had a little slow start, but ever since he's been making plays on defense constantly, interceptions every game almost. So I'm going to go a little shocker and go on the defensive side of the ball and give it to Emmanuel Davis.
That is an off-the-board pick. So, Mitchell, I could give it to Riley, too. Those numbers are fantastic, but the difference, and it's unfair, really, but Levi Mitchell's team is 12-1-1. Mm-hmm. Mike Riley's a 7-7. And I think when push comes to shove at the end of the year, no matter how great Riley's stats are, you're going to look at Calgary winning 14, 15, maybe even 16 games, and you're going to have a hard time not giving it to Bo Levi Mitchell. And he has been good. Like, it's not like he's just getting this award because he's the quarterback of the best team in the league. He has been outstanding this season, truly. And I'm with you as well. It kind of just, I've never really been blown away by him, but maybe that's one of those things where we need to, like I said, respect consistency. This guy week in, week out, just goes out and puts up the same numbers, and he's kind of boring, honestly, and I mean that in the most flattering way possible, but he's going to win this award, and I don't think there's really any way, barring injury, that we can't give it to him. So he's got my vote there. And for the Ticats, you mentioned him. I'm going with Adi Fantuz. Zach Collaros would have been penciled in here, especially after the first, say, like five games that he played for the Ticats after coming back. But Andy, these last 2 weeks, he's just taking this team on his back. Like, everything I said about him that I said when we were talking about most outstanding Canadian, doubly here. So for the Ticats, who haven't really had a guy I think that stood out as the most outstanding player, I'm going to give it to the guy that throughout all these injuries, throughout all this turmoil this year, has stood out and been clutch week in, week out, and that's Adi Fantuz.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah, like I said, it's just tough to pick anyone here, and it's time. I was so happy when Fantuz signed here all those years ago, and it's kind of nice to see him, even though it's years later, still be that dominant player. This guy's probably going to the Hall of Fame, to be perfectly honest with you. If not for his CFL career, then absolutely for his CIS, when he's maybe the greatest receiver in CIS history. But he's he's just been great. He's just been, for his entire career, this guy has been the model of consistency. He's been an awesome player, and it's nice to see, even at this football advanced age of like 32, 33, that he can still put up these massive numbers. It's a pleasure to watch him play, and we got lucky when he signed with the Ticats, and I've got a chance to see him live pretty much every game he's played in Hamilton. It's been awesome.
Yeah, and let's hope that he can be at that high productive level for a couple more years.
Yeah, let's get him that Grey Cup Most Outstanding Canadian Player and a win this time and not a loss like he got against Calgary.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right, Mike, so that's it. We are out of here. That's the podcast. That's the show. Man, a lot of talk about that. That Argos news really kind of just took the show off the rails, but man.
Yeah.
That is some amazing stuff. Nothing yet on any signings. The Argos have made it official, but they've released all those guys, so we can absolutely make sure that that is known. Those guys are out of Toronto, so that wasn't just speculation. That was true. That's still crazy. Anyway, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and listen to it, or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask Mike or myself a question, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
I am JoshSmith_82. And you can always post those questions in the comment section of 3downnation. So that was episode 59. We turned 60 next week, Mike. We're old men. We're senior citizens. Yeah. Next week, 60. So that was episode 59 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, win a damn game.
I concur.